should be in moves. Second, thank you. Thank you, all the members. That covers the minutes. A few weeks ago, we had an induction of the members on international agreements. That is part of our work as Select Committee for Finance to deal with these international agreements. And this is the team in front of you. We met them during the induction, except for Mr. Van der Merwe. He was abroad. And I welcome him back in the team. We worked for 5 years in the first parliament. They are the experts in the National Treasury and SARS dealing with the international agreements. Mr. Van der Merwe, you can introduce your team. Other members, you also received from the research unit a research document giving us a summary of the agreements we're going to deal with. Now, looking at the different agreements between South Africa, Swaziland, and Lesotho, it's about VAT. And the slides are the same, just the different countries. Referring to India and Turkey, the protocols are also the same, with one sentence which is different. On the African Tax Administration Forum in the South African SADC, developing countries, multilateral, are also the same, but the only difference with two slides on the introduction. Looking at the Cook Islands, the Tax Information Exchange Agreement, Barbados, Monaco, the slides are exactly the same. It's only the countries that differ. Then referring to Argentina, Liechtenstein, Belize, I have one or two slides which are different in the drafting from the other tax information exchange agreements. So I just want to give you this background, because lots of the agreements, the content, are the same that we try and not sit here until tonight. Yes. Oh yeah, and the last one is the South African Customs Union Agreement. That's the last one. So in total it will be 14. I just want to give the honorable members that background. After we've done the agreements, the briefings, the report will be tabled in the committee for adoption, and after that I'll give the Honourable Motara the opportunity just to brief us on this morning's program meeting, what is the latest developments there. Mr. Van der Merwe, welcome, and over to you. Please introduce your team. Alright, let's start with the members. My name is Charles de Beer, and I'm from the biggest province in South Africa, the Northern Cape. Let's go down this way.
Morning. My name is Tisney Motara and I'm from Gauteng.
Good morning, everybody. Leiso Mohai from Free State.
Tokoitile Motlasupi from Northwest.
Lennox Kela from Eastern Cape.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Farad Isaac, and I'm from Mpumalanga.
You say where the sun rises in Mpumalanga. Yeah. The staff, part and parcel of this committee.
Good morning, Orlando Brown, research for the Slick Muslim Congregation. I'm Lydia Orlandi. I'm from the Parliamentary Budget Office, I'm a policy analyst.
I am Mohana Dao, content advisor at Select Computer Corporation.
He's actually an advocate.
Good morning, I'm Fundisi Wekwele, researcher for the Select Committee on Finance.
Good morning, my name is Simon Mwango, I'm a researcher for Finance Committee.
Morning, I'm Rashad Amra. I'm an economist for the Parliamentary Budget Office.
Good morning, this is Alan Echendo, Committee Coordinator of the Telecom Transcendence.
To our team here, yeah, the Budget Office is an establishment of Parliament, and went through the process in the Select Committee for Finance and Appropriations in both houses, the establishment of the Parliamentary Budget Office. And it's to a great advantage, not only for us as Select Committees for Finance and Appropriations, but to Parliament as a whole. So they will be part of all our meetings in future, also to give us direction, but also to assist with analysis, specific on budgets, etc. Mr. Van der Merwe, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm Ron Van der Merwe from let me start that again. I'm Ron Van der Merwe, now happily retired, but working part-time for the South African Revenue Service, and as the Chair said, had the privilege to speak to this committee over a number of years, and look forward to more of it while I have the opportunity of being part-time with SARS. Let me pass it on to the rest of the team, who can introduce themselves.
Good morning, Ashwin Prasad, South African Revenue Service.
Good morning, Pranesh Rampal, SARS, Legal and Policy, and I'm from Pretoria.
Good morning, I'm Ashma Maharaj and I'm from Ron's team in International Treaties.
Other members, yes. Thank you for the introduction. This morning over the news, His Excellency President Zuma made an announcement that 67 South Africans lost their lives in Nigeria, in a church. It's our people. And out of respect, I want us to stand just for a moment of silence. Articles of interest in the agreement
with respect to value-added tax acts will establish a refund system to administer the refund and assessment of taxes provided for in agreement. What this really means, Chair, is when goods move from South Africa into Lesotho or vice versa, the VAT typically should carry a 0% because the VAT in any particular country is a domestic tax for its own sovereign state. So essentially when those goods move across, they should ordinarily be charged on that invoice at 0%. However, in the South African law, there are two types of mechanisms to achieve the 0%. The one is where we classify the export as a direct export, and that carries essentially a 0% VAT on the invoice. The next type of export is an indirect export, and that typically is where a citizen from, for example, Lesotho would come into South Africa and buy goods and move those goods across with his own means of transport. The law in South Africa requires that 14% be charged in the invoice with a refund mechanism at the point where the goods leave the country. So in context relating to this article relating to the refund system merely tries to give effect to the refund mechanism, but between states, between the tax authority in South Africa and the tax authority in either Lesotho or Swaziland. Why do we do this? Well, firstly, the tax laws between Swaziland, Lesotho, and South Africa are harmonized. Going back to Lesotho and Swaziland's implementation of VAT, South Africa influenced a lot of the policy adoptions when it comes to their VAT structure. So we have exactly the same VAT rate at 14%. We are in a common monetary area, so currency valuation is not an issue. The tax design and administration are more or less harmonized. And having that harmonization facilitates the implementation of a refund system. The benefits of such a refund system is that, number one, when goods move between country, between Lesotho, Swaziland, between South Africa and Swaziland and South Africa and Lesotho, it must go through a customs process. So the benefits of the refund system is that it harmonizes a common customs procedure. We've already made tremendous strides in further collaborating common harmonized customs procedures between the two countries. And why would we harmonize those procedures? It is to put in common control measures in place so that we avoid round-tripping of goods and undervaluation of movement of goods. The benefits of the refund system in terms of the agreement is also that it removes the incentives to under-declare imports and round-trip the goods, as I mentioned. It reduces the administrative burden immensely on both tax authorities. For example, there is no requirement for a VAT refund administrator to interface in between the two processes. Now, the VAT refund administrator is a concept that South Africa has adopted in giving effect to the refund under the current indirect export system. Remember, I mentioned that the VAT gets charged at 14%. We give effect to the refund by using an intermediary to refund that. Proposing a refund between the two countries, we seek to eliminate the intermediary. And down the line, it makes the refund more efficient because there are no intermediary costs between the two. So we actually refund 100% of the tax value without any potential commissions or fees charged in between that value chain. A further administrative advantage is that there would be less frequent payments to qualifying purchases. Currently, if you have 1,000 purchases moving goods from South Africa into Lesotho, where they are buying the goods from South Africa and the VAT is being charged, we have 1,000 payments. This refund system will reduce that payment to one payment directly to the tax authority. Now you may ask, why are we paying this to the foreign tax authority? Their laws essentially are exactly what South Africa has. When you export goods, you charge VAT at 0%, but when you import goods, there is a VAT on importation. So our VAT on export, if it is charged at 14%, is precisely Lesotho's or Swaziland's VAT on import. Paragraph 2 of the refund system, refund article, each contracting state may appoint a claims and refunds manager. And this we've put in as a placeholder. It's not a definite. Because Lesotho and Swaziland are new to the refund system, they may want to elect to appoint competent people to assist them in the implementation of this refund system. Paragraph 3 of Article 3, the refunds in respect of the tax shall be administered by each contracting state or by the claims and refunds manager. And more importantly, it is always subject to domestic VAT legislation. I mentioned that both countries, well, all three countries' VAT laws are harmonized in terms of similar tax design. So we wouldn't have any issues around non-compliance to domestic legislation. Paragraph 4 of the refund article, of Article 3, provides for a development and an establishment of a memorandum of understanding between the tax authorities, which will be developed purely for setting out operational procedures regarding the matters of refund of tax, the determining and monitoring of the amount of refunds in terms of the agreement, and the intervals at which these refunds are to be made. So the agreement itself is the overarching agreement, and emanating from the agreement is a set of memorandum of understanding document, which really details the nuts and bolts between our interactions relating to the refund system. It would also, the memorandum of understanding would also clarify the responsibilities of the claims and refunds manager if countries so adopt to appoint one. And it will also deal with any matter that will facilitate or improve the operation of the refund system. For example, in the MOU, it would provide guidance as to the turnaround times subject to the resource allocations between the tax authorities. Paragraph 5 merely states under Article 3 that where the tax has been charged and collected by a vendor in the export state on a sale or supply of the goods which have been exported, any refund due in respect of such amount of tax shall be transferred to the tax authority directly to the in the import state. The operational terms and conditions for the transfer of the refund must be determined by the tax authorities of the contracting states in the MOU. Continuing with the refund system, paragraph 6 of Article 3, where the importer has paid a lesser amount of tax, so this paragraph deals with, for example, if there is an increase in the VAT, for example, in Lesotho. Assume Lesotho increases their VAT rate to 15%. South Africa would charge the 14% of the movement of the goods. That's in accordance with domestic legislation. We will refund 14% because that's in accordance with our domestic legislation. This provision purely states that if there is a shortfall, the importing state, which is Lesotho in this case, they, under their domestic legislation, will recover the 1% that's due to them in terms of their law for the importation of the goods into their country. The next article of interest under this agreement is the Exchange of Information Clause, and in a nutshell, we rely on the exchange of information clauses pertaining to this agreement on other agreements, namely the income tax agreements, exchange of information clauses. So we don't seek to duplicate the comprehensive rules around exchange of information agreements that are already established under exchange of information agreements under income taxes. So you can see there is no need to duplicate. Brings in common themes which rely on preceding agreements. Article 5, notification of assessment or claim. This is a very useful article in the agreement where it provides for assistance in the collection of taxes. to simply provide an example on how this article would work. If, for example, there is a tax person in Lesotho or Swaziland that owes their tax authority an amount of tax with regards to VAT. And typically, maybe Lesotho would be a better example. We have many South Africans that conduct businesses in Lesotho and would rightfully, by the Lesotho VAT law, be required to register for VAT in Lesotho. If that taxable vendor in Lesotho has a tax liability which he is unable or cannot pay for various reasons to the Lesotho Revenue Authority, they may, under this provision of the agreement, request SARS and South Africa to collect such VAT on their behalf by using our own operational procedures. So it's actually a very beneficial article to have, because we share common borders with Lesotho and Swaziland. Article 7 purely deals with resolution of difficulties. In a nutshell, it says in order to reach agreement, an oral exchange of opinions can take place directly, as opposed to the long-winded difficulties or time delays that may take place as a result of writing to competent authorities. Chair, that's the presentation on the agreement itself. I have a few slides which detail the memorandum of understanding. As mentioned earlier, the memorandum of understanding is part of the agreement, but its founding and its nuts and bolts reside between Commissioner General of each tax, Commissioner of SARS, and the Commissioner General of the respective countries. With your permission, Chair, these are largely operational issues. I would like to present them to you, but I would take your cue and advice on that.
For the sake of the minutes, you will have to address this.
Thank you, Chair.
Do it in a great way.
Yes. Chair, the memorandum of understanding, as founded in the refund mechanism article of the agreement, provides that the value-added tax refund system between SARS and the respective countries which we intend seeking this agreement includes the following articles, and I must stress that this memorandum of understanding is empowered under Article 3 of the agreement, which is also empowered under our domestic laws. Articles of interest are number one, Article 4, the exclusions. There is VAT paid on services rendered in South Africa. Now, if you recall, I only mentioned VAT refunds in respect of goods moving across between two states. There is no refund on services. So we put it straight up front that these are the exclusions, so everybody understands what's included and what's not included. VAT paid on goods imported into the country of residence through postal services. These are specifically excluded because each country administers the customs operational requirements at their respective postal services. So typically these goods, when they move across, they should move at 0%. The third exclusion would be VAT paid on goods if the goods were direct export. I mentioned that there were two types of mechanisms where you can export goods under VAT in South Africa. The direct export carries the 0%, so this is specifically excluded to avoid any ambiguity as to whether if VAT was charged on a direct export, the rules would indicate that VAT must be reversed by the supplier of those goods. Another exclusion is VAT paid on goods imported via an airport. This is also very logical because we have customs presence at international airports between the two countries, and those follow the normal customs procedures. The Article 5 of the MOU deals with the refund procedures. It empowers each country to administer the refunds by the tax authority or by a manager, if so appointed. The refunds must be paid directly to the tax authority, So we will eliminate any intermediation between for the purposes of payment. There is no refund that will be paid to the qualifying purchaser, albeit that the qualifying purchaser will present its mandatory documentation at point of exit between the two countries. The facilitation of the refund will be directly to the tax authority. The claims which are to be submitted by both parties in respect of the movement of goods, which are subject to the refund article, must be agreed and in such form as prescribed and agreed to between the two authorities. So, needless to say, there would be a necessity to develop policies and procedures which will be shared between the two authorities. Article 6 deals with designated border posts and it's premised on customs operational procedures at various border posts. Now, between these two countries, not all land border posts are designated border posts. So, in the memorandum of understanding, it will detail the exact customs procedures that need to take place at designated border posts. However, we are mindful that for economic and cost efficiency reasons, goods may leave through non-designated border posts. For example, goods on their way to Lesotho may pass through the Sunny Pass land border post, which incidentally is a non-designated border post. We do not exclude movement of goods, but we would want to introduce procedures of pre-clearance so that customs can do their respective functions at those designated border posts. Article 8 deals with the mandatory documents that need to be in place between the two countries in order for this memorandum of understanding and agreement to be to work efficiently. There's a requirement that all invoices presented for refund claims must be original invoices as prescribed under domestic legislation. The reason why we require original invoices is it substantially reduces duplication of claims and fraudulent transactions. Article 9 deals with registrable goods. It's a known fact that registrable goods such as motor vehicles do get sourced by these countries, Lesotho and Swaziland from South Africa. There are certain requirements to be adhered to in order to give effect to the VAT refund under this arrangement. One of them would be, including others, would be the proof of authorized release of the vehicle at the border post and proof of registration into that country of import. Article 10 deals with the determination and monitoring of amounts. In terms of domestic legislation, we have a requirement that in order for a qualifying purchaser to make the claim to the respective tax authority, those goods must be exported within 90 days. So these are control mechanisms that would have to be adhered to under the memorandum of understanding. They are not requirements that we have developed outside domestic law. They are actually domestic law as prescribed in our regulations pertaining to export of goods. Furthermore, refund of claims with 90 days from date of export must be made. Obligations for Lesotho, and you see on the slide it says Swaziland Revenue Authority, SRA, but it's equally applicable to the Lesotho Revenue Authority, that this article merely states that communication must be made if should they wish to appoint a claims and refunds manager so that we have we adhere to governance rules. Exchange of information on non-compliance must be done in accordance with the memorandum of understanding. This is the exchange of information relating to non-compliance is really the heart of addressing revenue leakage between, you know, in terms of schemes that traders might want to develop, you know, as a result of moving goods into one jurisdiction, but round tripping them for other reasons, and thereby circumventing the payment of the correct tax to the relevant country. Obligations, further obligations by that need to be adhered to by the Lesotho and Swaziland is that they must ensure that the manager performs necessary functions, that is the claims or refunds manager, if so appointed. And namely, the crucial elements that needs to be ensured is that the tax invoice and claim verification or refund forms and envelopes or documents must be submitted on time. Needless to say, when we wish to also have obligations imposed onto the domestic, our own tax authority, we merely replicate that exchange of information must also be communicated. In terms of obligations to pay the refunds, as most of the goods are a one-way, I wouldn't say 100% one-way flow, but most goods that are acquired in Lesotho and Swaziland are sourced from South Africa. So you can typify that most VAT refunds would be made from South Africa into these, into the countries. We've taken at this stage a very proactive approach that we would seek to pay 100% of all RSA VAT directly to the tax authority. And if there are any inconsistencies or errors, we would counter and adjust those errors in future claims. So by way of an example, if we make a single payment on the 15th of every month to either Lesotho or Swaziland, subject to our audit and compliance procedures, if we find there are certain claims that fell within the exclusions, we would offset them against future refunds. But these would obviously be subject to change if there are material differences that emerge from the MOU. We could always go back to the Memorandum of Understanding and seek to adjust the 100% somewhere down to an acceptable level. Chair, that is essentially the agreement for both the countries. And thank you for listening.
Thank you, honourable members. We're going to deal now with the Lesotho and Swaziland, the two kingdoms. Welcome, Mr. Tomaszek. Yeah, we've got a brand new team. We worked with Mr. Tomaszek in the first parliament for 5 years. We're looking forward to the next 5. You brought two gentlemen with you. Can you just introduce them as well?
Sure, they're going to have to speak later, so I think they should introduce themselves. They'll be handling the SACU agreement, with your permission.
Good day, Chair. I'm Ronald Mosler from SARS, and I'll be talking on the customs.
Good morning, Chair. Mark van den Broek will be dealing with NXE.
Yeah. We'll have to speak close to the mic. It's very short there. I don't know why they do make it like this. Honourable members, are there any questions in terms of these two agreements that was now presented to us? It's very straightforward. That countries conduct their trade in an orderly way. It's an international way of doing things. Seeing that there's no questions, thank you for this presentation. I'm going to put the agreement to the committee. Which one is this? The report of the Select Committee on Finance on the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of the Kingdom of Lesotho on mutual assistance and cooperation and the prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to value added tax dated 17 September 2014, and that the committee have considered this, and I put it that we approve this. Can I get a mover? Honorable Mohai moves, a seconder? It seconds. We must do this in the correct way, honorable members, because this is affecting two countries. This is how serious this is. That's that one. The other one is on Swaziland, report of the Select Committee on Finance on the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of the Kingdom of Swaziland on the mutual assistance and cooperation, and the prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to value-added tax, dated 17 September 2014, that the Select Committee of Finance have considered this. Can we get a mover for the adoption of this agreement? Honorable Motara moves, and Honorable Issa seconds. That deals with those two. It just dots it down. We also recognize Honorable Mutleni. He came a bit late, but welcome. He attended another meeting. Then, Honorable members, we can move to the protocols from India and Turkey. After that, there will be multilaterals, and then we go into the tax information exchange agreements. Who will lead us?
Thank you, Chair. So we're moving on to the protocols and ending the double taxation agreements and convention. And the first protocol that we're going to deal with is India protocol and ending the double taxation agreement between South Africa and India. Now, the reason for this amendment and doing this protocol was to became necessary in view of the global initiative to incorporate a comprehensive exchange of information article in our double taxation agreement. We've only amended one agreement, which was Article 25, an exchange of information, and we deleted the Article 25 and we added a new article, an exchange of information. Now, that article is in line with the OECD and UN model conventions and extends to taxes of every kind and description. And then we added a sentence after paragraph 2. It's a new alternative that is found, like I mentioned before, at our induction in the OECD's Model Tax Convention, the 2014 update. And it allows for information received by a competent contracting state to use for other purposes when the competent authority of the supplying state authorizes such use, and it's allowed under the domestic law of both the states. And then the new article ensures that bank secrecy and domestic tax interest can no longer be used to deny exchange of information. Now, this article also allows full exchange of information and it includes automatic exchange of information and spontaneous exchange of information. Chair, the Turkey protocol, the presentation is exactly the same except that we do not have the sentence with regard to paragraph 2. Now, in terms of our model, we've updated our model and we've included the sentence after paragraph 2 where the competent authority can use the information for other purposes. A jurisdiction doesn't need to, if we're negotiating, to accept that proposal because if their domestic law doesn't allow for it. So that's the only difference. Shall I move on? Okay. So we're moving on to the African Tax Administration Forum, the multilateral agreement. Now, the African Tax Administration Forum was established on the 8th. Yes, we're moving on to the multilateral. Okay.
Are there any questions regarding the protocols between South Africa, India, and Turkey? None? Thank you. I put in this report to the committee, report of the Select Committee on Finance on the protocol amending the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Republic of Turkey for the avoidance of double taxation and the prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to taxes on income, dated 17 September 2014, and the Select Committee of Finance having considered this agreement. A mover, Honorable Gaila moves. Seconder, Honorable Motlashupi. Thank you. The second one is the report of the Select Committee on Finance on the protocol amending the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of the Republic of India for the avoidance of double taxation and prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to taxes on income, dated 17 September 2014, as considered by the Select Committee for Finance. Can I get the mover for this agreement? second. Honorable Mutara moves, seconder. Honorable Essa seconds. Thank you very much. That deals with the two protocols. Now we can go to the multilaterals.
Thank you, Chair. Dealing with the African Tax Administration Forum Agreement on Mutual Assistance in Tax Matters, like it's been mentioned by the Chair, the African Tax Administration Forum Agreement, the SADC Assistance Agreement, actually is a duplication in many respects, but I will point out when I get to SADC what those differences are. Okay, the purpose of the agreement is to allow for effective exchange of information and assistance. But going back, ASEF was established on the 8th of October 2012, and the parties to the ASEF Multilateral Agreement on Mutual Assistance in Tax Matters are the 36 member states of ASEF. Now, those 36 member states of ASEF include Benin, Botswana, Burkina Faso, Burundi, Cameroon, Chad, the Comoros, Cote d'Ivoire, Egypt, Eritrea, Gabon, Gambia, Ghana, Kenya, Lesotho, Liberia, Madagascar, Malawi, Mauritania, Mauritius, Morocco, Mozambique, Namibia, Nigeria, Rwanda, Senegal, Seychelles, Sierra Leone, South Africa, Sudan, Swaziland, Tanzania, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Now, the agreement allows for the exchange of information and assistance between the tax authorities, and it also increases cooperation amongst tax authorities to combat tax avoidance and evasion. Now, the cooperation covers exchange of information, simultaneous tax examinations abroad, the recovery of tax claims, mutual agreement procedures, and the facilitation of joint audits. Now, it closely follows the articles in exchange of information and assistance in collection in both the OECD and UN model tax conventions. And the articles of interest, in terms of Article 2 on the objective is to, of the agreement is to enable the contracting states to assist each other in tax matters. And this allows, again, for exchange of information, tax examinations abroad, simultaneous tax examinations, and assistance in the collection of taxes. Moving on to Article 3 on taxes covered, the agreement applies to all taxes on income, capital, and taxes on goods and services. Article 4 on exchange of information. Agreement allows for the exchange of information for spontaneous, automatic, and information on request in terms of provisions of the agreement, and for the administration and enforcement of the domestic law of the requesting party as far as the taxes covered are concerned. Let me continue. It does not impose on the contracting states the obligation to carry out administrative measures at variances with their laws and administrative practices. It does not information that is not obtainable in the laws or the normal course of the administration, and the supply of information, disclosure of any trade, business, industrial, commercial, and professional secret or trade process or information, disclosure of which would be contrary to public policy, so that does not oblige jurisdiction to provide information. Then moving on, domestic tax interest and bank secrecy can no longer be used to deny requests for exchange of information. Article 5 deals with tax examinations abroad, and this allows representatives to enter the territory of the requested party to interview individuals and to examine records, of course with the written consent of the taxpayer concerned. The requested party may allow representatives of the other state to participate in any appropriate part of the tax examination in the territory of the requested party. And all the decisions with regard to the conduct of this tax examination is made by the requested party actually conducting the examination. Article 6 deals with the simultaneous examination. So one of the contracting states or two or more of the competent authorities can consult with each other for the purpose of determining cases and procedures for simultaneous tax examinations. And they can, these company authorities can then decide whether they wish to be part of the simultaneous tax examination. Second deals with assistance and collection. Upon request, assistance and collection can be provided by the requested party. The revenue claim relating to measures of conservancy under the domestic law can be accepted by the requested party to take these measures of conservancy. Now, measures of conservancy actually deal with the freezing of assets or actually conserving assets for the to actually prevent the taxpayer from actually disposing of those assets. Article 8, confidentiality. So any information is treated as secret and protected in the same manner as the domestic law of that party. And information received this can only be disclosed to persons or authorities, including courts and administrative bodies, which are concerned with the statement or collection of or enforcement or prosecution in respect of determination of appeal. And the information can be disclosed in public proceedings or in judicial decisions. Article 8 on costs. Here there is actually a waiver of all claims for reimbursement of ordinary costs. And the requested party anticipates that the costs are expected to be substantial and extraordinary. Before actually incurring those costs, would need to liaise with the competent authority of the requesting party to determine who is going to determine how the manner of the costs would be borne. Now, Article 11 deals with other international agreements or arrangements, and this agreement is not limited nor is it limited by any other international agreement, which means that if we, for instance, have a TIA, a tax information exchange agreement with one of the jurisdictions, which only allows the exchange of information request, this agreement is not restricted by that. Because this is actually a wider multilateral allowing for exchange of information request, spontaneous and automatic exchange of information. Then we have a mutual agreement procedure in Article 12 where there's difficulty or doubt arises with regard to the implementation or interpretation of the agreement. The competent authority shall endeavor to resolve the matter by mutual agreement. Article 15 is regards the ratification entry of force of the agreement, and the agreement has to be ratified by the members in accordance with their constitutional processes. And the agreement will enter into force after 30 calendar days, after 5 of the members have submitted their instrument of ratification to the Executive Secretary of ASAP. Now, once the agreement is approved here, we will send our instrument of ratification and a notification to the Executive Secretary of ASAP, saying that we have completed all the requirements in terms of the South African law. And that notification is in terms of Article 14 on competent authority. And the competent authority is the Commissioner for the South African Revenue Service or an authorized representative of the Commissioner. Sure, that's the presentation for the ATAP agreement. And moving on to the SADC multilateral agreement. Now, SADC was established on the 17th August 1992, where the SADC Treaty was adopted and redefined the basis of cooperation between the member states into a legally binding arrangement. Now, the parties to the SADC agreement are your 15 member states of SADC, and those are Angola, Botswana, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Lesotho, Madagascar, Malawi, Mauritius, Mozambique, Namibia, Seychelles, South Africa, Swaziland, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Now, the agreement has been approved by the SADC Council of Ministers of Finance and Ministers of Justice. And this agreement is also in line with Annex 3 of the SADC Protocol on Finance and Investment, which requires that the member states draw effective guidelines for the exchange of information, tax matters, and in assistance and collection and for the implementation of mutual agreements procedures. And Chair, the presentation is the same for ATAF, but I'd just like to point out minor differences with the drafting. In Article 3, taxes covered, there's Just for the third line, the last three, four words is exception of customs duties. Now, these multilaterals would not include the exchange of information for customs purposes. We would exchange information under the bilateral customs agreements or multilateral customs agreements. Although ACAP doesn't refer to that, it is a given that it will not cover customs agreements. SADC just wanted to make that more clearer. Then moving on to Article 9 and COP. Okay, the first sentence, it says, shall waive all claims for reimbursement of costs. And in ATAF, we refer to ordinary costs. Here we just refer to costs, but it's still within the standard that we will only include the ordinary costs, which are general administrative costs for reviewing and responding to queries. So that's still within the international standard. And then we have Article 15. The second sentence, we have the entry into force will take place in 30 calendar days after 2/3 of the member states. ATAC, we have 5 member states who need to deposit the instrument of ratification, whereas under this agreement, 10 member states would have to deposit the instrument of ratification before the agreement will enter into force. Sure, and that is the difference.
Thank you very much. All the members, are there any questions on these two protocols? Of the multilateral, sorry. Pardon? Yeah. I put this in the report to the committee that Report of the Select Committee on Finance on the African Tax Administration Forum Agreement on Mutual Assistance in Tax Matters, dated the 17th of September 2014, and that the committee has considered the agreement. Can I get a mover for adoption? Honorable Mohai moves for adoption. Seconder? Honorable Gaylor seconds. The other multilateral members, report of the Select Committee on Finance on the Southern African Development Community Agreement on the assistance in tax matters dated 17 September 2014, and that the committee have considered this agreement. Honorable Isaac moves, seconder. Honorable Motara second. Thank you. All the members that deal with that one. Now we go to the tax information exchange agreements. That's with between South Africa and the Cook Islands, Barbados, and Monaco. How they group together, this is as I see it. All the members must also realize that this must become part of our oversight. So yeah, just bear that in mind as well. I see they all smile. You might proceed, please.
Thank you, Chair. Now the reason why our presentations are the same for the Cook Islands, Barbados, and Monaco is that, like I mentioned in the induction, we work on the South African model here, which is these countries accepted our model. Okay, so the purpose of the agreement is to allow for effective exchange of information. So dealing with the Cook Islands, Monaco, and Barbados, our tiers closely follow the OECD model tax information exchange agreement, which forms the vast majority of tiers around the world. Bank secrecy and domestic tax interests can no longer be used to deny a request for information. And the articles of interest are as follows. We have Article 1 on the scope of the agreement. Now, exchange of information as to be foreseeably relevant for the administration or enforcement of the domestic law concerning taxes covered. And that this includes information that is foreseeably relevant to the determination, assessment, enforcement, or collection, or to the investigation or the prosecution of criminal tax matters. And that the requested party has to ensure that there is effective exchange of information that is not unduly prevented or delayed. Article 2, taxes covered. The agreement applies to any identical taxes imposed after the date of signature and addition of the agreement, in addition to and in place of any existing taxes and all substantially similar taxes. Article 4, exchange of information upon request. Information shall be exchanged without regard now to domestic tax interests. A domestic tax interest is where the requested party needs such information for its own tax purposes, or dual criminality, which is whether the conduct being investigated would constitute a crime under the laws of the requested party. Now, the domestic law should allow for exchange of information for the following: information held by banks, other financial institutions, any person, including a nominee or trustee acting in agency or fiduciary capacity. Information on the legal and beneficial ownership of companies, partnerships, foundations, and other persons, including the collective investment schemes, the information on shares, units, and other interests. And in the case of trusts, the information on the settlers, trustees, and the beneficiaries. Now, this does not create an obligation to provide ownership information with regard to publicly traded companies or public collective investment schemes, unless that information can be obtained without giving rise to disproportionate difficulties. Article 5, tax examination abroad. Now, it allows for representatives of the competent authority of the requesting party to enter the territory of the requested party in terms of the domestic law of the requested party. It allows for presence at the interviews conducted by the requested party, and all of this is subject to that requested party. Article 6, the possibility of declining a request. So a competent authority can decline to assist where the disclosure of that information would be contrary to public policy. It also does not impose an obligation to provide items of information which is subject to legal privilege, such as any trade, business, industrial, commercial, or professional secret trade process. And a request may not be refused if the claim is being disputed by the taxpayer. And information is not provided, does not need to be provided if it relates to a law which discriminates against the national law of that requested party. Second is confidentiality. Now, all information has to be kept confidential. And information received shall be disclosed only to persons, authorities, including those courts and administrative bodies. Information received may not be used without the express written consent of the competent authority of the requested party. In Article 8 on costs, it follows the international standard. Indirect costs are borne by the requested party, whereas the direct costs, which include the cost of engaging external advisors, in connection with litigation, is borne by the requesting party. Now, the requesting party has to be notified if those costs are expected to be significant. 9, we have our mutual agreement procedure. So if there's any difficulty or doubt relating to the implementation or interpretation, the competent authorities will then use their best efforts to resolve the matter by mutual agreement. Chair, and that's the presentation.
That covers the Cook Islands, Barbados, and Monaco. Are there any questions to the presenters or Bomoai?
Chair, it's not a specific matter, it's a general question. These agreements, what happens during the violation of these terms? Have they been ever violated, the terms of this agreement, and also the volumes of trade differ country to country, and the complexities of tax matters so will differ, I think, regarding this country to country. We may say there may be drugs coming from certain countries to South Africa and vice versa. It may not be the same with Lesotho. it may be agricultural related. I'm just asking general question. I want to understand the complexities. I'm interested in how, where there are violations and how do countries conduct this trade diplomacy. I believe it's around issues of trade diplomacy and trade and industry may be much more at play. Here is administration, regulation is fine, and the country must be spot on. But at the public policy sector, where things fail, where things collapse, have they ever, or is it smooth sailing as you present? Things are nice, we don't have.
Anyone else? Very good question. Can you deal with that?
Thank you, Honourable Member, for that question. With regard to just looking at the tiers, with regard to violation of those agreements, we haven't had any difficulties with these agreements because of the initiative by the Global Forum to actually review jurisdictions to ensure that their domestic law would comply with the international standard for the exchange of information. Now, this relates to the exchange of information for taxes covered. When it comes to things like the customs matters, the drugs coming in and agricultural, etc., those would normally be included under your customs mutual administrative assistance agreement for exchange of information under those agreements. And my colleagues will be actually presenting agreements on the SACU Annex E, which will cover some of that. It will allow for exchange of information, automatic, spontaneous, and on request. But no, we haven't seen violations, but I guess in the future, perhaps there could be some issues with the country's domestic law. But we've been able to use these agreements now because countries have to bring their domestic law in line with the international standard.
Yeah, I think it's also important to note that in respect of these tax information exchange agreements with the three countries mentioned here and a number of others which we already have, these countries were in the past labeled tax havens. I think they're now called offshore financial jurisdictions. It's a more polite description. But the fact of the matter is they're unlikely to request information from us because of the, could I say, almost non-existence of tax in those respective jurisdictions. So the flow of requests will be almost entirely from South Africa to those jurisdictions, and it's the whole object, of course, is to stop tax avoidance. And however we can extend our network of these agreements to cover possible cases of tax avoidance, well, the more the better. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mwai, you covered. Honourable McLeany. Please use your mic.
I forgot to talk at the top of my voice. I just want to know these agreements, when they are like interlinked like this one, doesn't this affect the, I don't know whether to say the rand value. In South Africa we use rand. Still there's one country which always preempts that this time around South Africa, the rand now is collapsing. When we are into these interrelationships with the other foreign countries, are we not somehow affected?
Chair, the whole impact of these particular agreements is merely exchange of information and assistance in collection. Exchange of information on tax matters. It's unlikely to have any kind of impact on the rand as such. That might be the case in a trade agreement something of that nature which would be done by DTI, but certainly would have no impact in relation to these particular agreements. Even in the case of a full double taxation agreement, Chair, it regulates taxation between the two countries and should therefore have no impact on currency valuation. Thank you.
Mr. Tomaszek.
Thank you, Chair. I broadly agree with all of that. And to the extent there is any impact, I would suggest it's probably positive for two reasons. When you're dealing with a tax information exchange agreement, you're essentially discouraging people from hiding money in these places. And so they should be keeping the money where it belongs, which is here. So I suggest that would, if anything, have a positive impact on the rand. And when you're dealing with a full double taxation agreement, the whole reason you enter into that is to encourage investment. And again, encouraging investment into South Africa is something that would hopefully improve the situation with the rand. To the extent that you're encouraging investment into the other country by South African companies, the reason South African companies invest in other countries is so they can get a profit and bring money back into this country. So again, I think in general it probably doesn't have a huge impact on the rand, but to the extent it does, it probably would be positive. But if anyone can think of an argument why it wouldn't be, I'd be happy to hear it.
Yeah. And we have an interesting incident a day or two ago at Lanseria Airport where a plane landed and they got off with a suitcase full of notes to do some business. And then they met SARS. Yeah. So that's why there must be order in terms of the trade between countries, whatever you do. When you leave South Africa through O.R. Tambo International or Cape Town International going abroad, before you go through the customs and you present your passport, your whole history comes onto that screen. And there's a very interesting sentence. What's your SARS history? Yeah, if there's something wrong, you're going to make a U-turn. Are there any other questions? This is just an enlightenment. Use your mic.
To add on that one, are you, like, you raised something that I also had in mind as you explained further. When we were growing up, we were told that, no, there are, I'm sorry to put it this way, if one individual may be affected. Those Indians who are doing business in our area, they don't do the bankings in the country. They instead, you know, have all those monies in their banks to India. And I'm able that we find a bit of it. That's why they believe they bank it and just for the sake of their economy to rise. And, you know, I exchanged this with one of my friends in Toyando. He's a well-to-do businessman. And he said it that he's not banking in South Africa. So I just want to understand if, you know, at the port of entry, do you have detector machines where maybe if one has that money in the bank, you are always sending them away? Or they
Honorable Chairperson, forgive me. What is Honorable Mtileni's point?
I think I should be protected. Are you SARS, yourself? That you
just
maybe it's like it starts. I think I was just following on what you just said.
Yes.
I think I'm not out of order here. Honorable is like it's out of order. Because of your tendencies of
question to the team.
You must send him out.
No, I'm not going to send him out. I noted Honorable Moai.
I think the honourable member can ask a question without attributing it to any nationality. Must raise an issue if about issues of tax, can raise that issue so that it's not an issue that causes unnecessary consternation.
This is tax administration between countries. We're still going to deal with tax amendment laws that's coming our way in a few weeks' time. I noted all the matter.
Thanks, Chair. I think maybe also we must restrict our questions to what is being presented, because what he's asking is about banking, and I think It's foreign exchange, it's banking, if you're not a South African national, you can't bank in South Africa. Maybe that's the reason that they take their money out of the country. But I think that let's stick to questions related to tax matters as presented by SARS.
We will be visiting the Reserve Bank, I think, on the 14th of October, Development Bank of South Africa, Southern Africa, etc. So then we can deal with those issues. Let's get more serious now. Honourable members, I'm going to put this report to the committee referring to these three countries and South Africa. The Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by the Parliament of the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of the Cook Islands for the exchange of information relating to tax matters, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Can I get a mover for this agreement? A mover, Honorable Motara. Honorable Kayla, seconds. The second one is with Barbados. Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for the approval by Parliament of the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of Barbados for the exchange of information relating to tax matters, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Can I get a mover for adoption? Honorable Isaac Mills and Honorable Mutara seconds. Last one, that's with Monaco. The Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of the Principality of Monaco for the exchange of information relating to tax matters, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Can we get a mover for this one? Honorable Matala moves, Honorable Kayla seconds. All my members, tea is outside. Do you want a comfort break, or can we carry on that you can set your tea as you wish? Can we carry on? Thank you. That brings us to the tax information exchange agreements between South Africa and Argentina, Liechtenstein, and Belize, and the United States is another one. In separate time. Yeah. Who will lead us on this? Fine. You can hit the road running.
Sure. As I said before, we use our model, and normally we propose our model to the other jurisdiction. With regards to Argentina, there's just one difference from what I presented on the Cook Islands, and that's Article 8 on costs. It's actually just a drafting difference, but it's still in line with the international standard. First sentence, it's indirect costs are borne by the requested party, direct costs are borne by the requesting party. Here we haven't made mention of it includes costs of external advisors in litigation, but that's what it would include because those are extraordinary costs. So it's still in line with the international model and our model as well. So moving on to Liechtenstein. Okay, in terms of Article 1, there is a difference with regard to the title. Article 1 is object and scope of the agreement, whereas in our model it's just scope of the agreement. In paragraph 2, there's a reference, sentence 2, there's a reference in the third line to the recovery and enforcement of tax claims. Now, that is exactly in line with the international model. The reference to recovery is not included in our model because we also refer in line 2 to and collections of taxes. So that's in line with the model. What is a little bit different about this agreement is that Liechtenstein wanted an Article 2 on jurisdiction. Normally we would include the provision on jurisdiction in Article 1 in our agreement. So we have an Article 2 on jurisdiction and then the rest of the articles are renumbered. But this is still in line with the international model because that's actually the OECD model. Then in Article 5 on exchange of information upon request. Next slide.
information regarding ownership. We haven't referred to legal and beneficial ownership, but that's what we would intend, the ownership within the ownership chain. So it's full in line with the model. With regard to B, Roman numeral 2, there is a clarification with regard to, in the case of foundations, information on founders, members of the foundation council, and beneficiaries. And the reason for that is Liechtenstein has foundations, and this is the kind of information, if we make a request, that they will be in a position to provide to us. In Article 9 on costs, okay, the first sentence, the requesting party shall reimburse the requested party for all the direct costs incurred in providing information pursuant to this agreement. This is exactly in line with our model that the direct costs are borne by the requesting party and indirect costs are borne by the requested party. Now, Liechtenstein wanted a clarification with regard to costs. And what they wanted was a protocol to the tier. That's the last two slides. And what we would normally do with regard to a clarification on costs is enter into a memorandum of understanding between competent authorities on costs. But Liechtenstein wanted to make it more clear that Article 9 on costs has been clarified, and that they wanted to make it clear what these direct costs included but were not limited to. And these included the reasonable costs of reproducing and transporting documents or records, reasonable fees by, imposed by financial institutions, other record keepers for copying records and for research, reasonable costs for stenographic reports, interviews, depositions, or testimonies, reasonable fees and expenses determined in accordance with amounts allowed under the applicable domestic law, for persons who would voluntarily appear in the territory of one of the contracting parties for interviews, depositions, or testimonies relating to particular information requested, and then reasonable legal fees for non-governmental counsel appointed or retained for litigation purposes. Now, the direct costs would not include the ordinary administrative and overhead expenses which are incurred for reviewing and responding to information requests. And that's exactly in line with our model, where indirect costs are your normal overhead expenses are borne by the requested party, and the direct costs are borne by the requesting party. So it is in line with our model. It's just in a greater clarification. And then moving on to Belize, Article 1, scope of the agreement. This is a minor drafting difference, and it's in line with the OECD model as well, the alternative. It's in third line, first sentence, concerning taxes and tax matters. And then in Article 8 on costs. Again, indirect costs are borne by the requested party, direct costs are borne by the requesting party. We haven't made reference again to a cost of external advisors and litigation with regard to litigation like in our model, but that would those direct costs are included or are incurred by the requesting party. So this is still in line with our model. It's exactly what we also have with Argentina. Chen, that's the differences.
Questions? Clarity? Straightforward. Thank you. You are very progressive. We've done this. Argentina, the first time in Belize, we are there. I put the following agreements to the committee, the Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by the Parliament of the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of Belize for the exchange of information relating to tax matters, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Any the removal of the Bulgarian mills, for adoption of the Motara seconds. Thank you. The other one is with Argentine. The Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by the Parliament of the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and Argentine Republic for the exchange of information relating to tax matters, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. A mover for this agreement. Thank you, Honourable Moai. Moved. Second by Honourable Taylor. The last one, Honourable Members, was Liechtenstein. The Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for the approval by Parliament of the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of the Principality of Liechtenstein for the exchange of information relating to tax matters, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. The mover for adoption, Honourable Gaila moves. Seconder, Honourable Motla Shubin. He looks very anxious to Madara seconds. Thank you. Honourable Members, that brings us to the United States. The agreement with the United States to improve international tax compliance and implement of the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. Mr. Tomaszek. The one in the United States, the one in SOC, were totally, totally different. Fantastic. Deal with them separately.
Thank you, Chair. This agreement is something you probably have not seen before. It is a little different, and the reason it's different is explained as history. We've been talking about the Tax Information Exchange Agreements up until now, which talks to a global standard where information needs to be exchanged between countries' jurisdictions on request. Now, the world is currently moving in the direction of exchanging information automatically. So I don't need to have a suspicion that something's going on and then ask for information. The information will be exchanged automatically. So in a South African context, think about that little certificate you get from your bank that says you've earned so much interest this year. The idea is that where someone from another jurisdiction earns interest in this country, we would exchange it with them and the other way around. So all the tax authorities would then know what's in bank accounts around the world. But that is a development at the moment. It's still happening. Now, the US back in 2010 thought, well, you know, we understand that there's this thing called the global standard that's emerging for information exchange on request, but we want to go a step further. We want automatic exchange of information. We want to know what is happening in Americans' bank accounts around the world. And so they introduced what was called FATCA, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. And what that said was, if you as a bank anywhere in the world do business in the United States of America, if you do not tell us what American citizens are doing in your bank and what interest they're earning, we're going to impose a 30% withholding tax on any income you get from the United States. Now, lots of banks around the world have investments in the United States, and a 30% withholding tax would be very, very expensive for them. Okay, so this is a very credible threat from the United States that if you do not exchange information with them, your bank is going to have a problem. But as you can imagine, the world was not very happy with that idea, because they said, now hang on a second, the usual basis is that these things are done by way of a treaty. We exchange information with you, you exchange information with us. This is all going one way now. This doesn't seem fair to us. And what happened then was, in 2012, the United States took account of that pushback and said, okay, look, what we can do is this. We will create these kinds of agreements that will allow us to exchange the information going potentially both ways, but not if you don't want it. So they released three agreements, essentially. There's what they call Model 1, where the bank would give the information to the local revenue authority, and the local revenue authority would send it to the United States. And that's available in two versions. There's one version where it goes both ways, so the United States will equally collect information on South Africans in the United States with bank accounts and send it to SARS. Or you can do it in a non-reciprocal version, where it's just one way to the United States. And then there's what's called Model 2, which is where the banks continue to provide the information directly to the United States Revenue Service, the IRS, but in a more regulated sort of way. And so the idea here was to basically try and get a bit more standardized and address some of the concerns the world had raised. excuse me. Of course, another reason for that was some countries won't let you as a bank exchange information outside of the country, so you need some other instrument to do it, and that's what Model 2 is about. Now, as far as we're concerned, we wanted Model 1 reciprocal, so the information must go both ways, because all our treaties are both ways. And so let's look at the Model 1 in a bit more detail. What that means is the bank doesn't have to talk to the IRS directly anymore. We're going to have an exchange of information from the bank to the revenue authority, and then from our revenue authority to them, and that's the problem solved from the US perspective, and the other way around as well. Banks in the United States will report to the IRS will exchange the information with SARS. And if that happens, there's no withholding tax. So we got cabinet approval, and we went in to discuss this with the United States. And as I've already mentioned, it's going to be a bilateral way. It goes through the tax authorities. And this will all happen in the framework of our existing double taxation agreement or double taxation convention. So it sits in an existing framework, and it goes into a bit more detail now as to what needs to happen. So let's move on. So Article 1. If you're going to have a look at Article 1, there are a lot of definitions in it. And the reason for that is essentially this agreement aligns with and overrides to some extent the American FATCA provisions. Because if you comply with this agreement, you don't need to worry about FATCA in the United States. And so essentially we have to have a lot of definitions so that the Americans are comfortable that we agree. Interestingly enough, there's a clause we'll get to later in Article 4.7, if I remember correctly, which says if it turns out that the Americans change their law so that it's more favorable than this agreement, you can use the American law. So we've built that protection, and that's there. So what do we need to do? So what we need to do is exchange information, and Article 2 tells you what kind of information we're going to exchange. So it's information on earnings, the balances, and so on. Moving on. Right, so time and manner. So the first automatic exchange happens next year. We are working with our local financial institutions to ensure they're comfortable with reporting to us so that we can exchange. And talking about our local financial institutions, they are immensely relieved that we have negotiated a Model 1 agreement with the United States. Because for them, the costs and potential liabilities that they would bear if there was no agreement in place is much, much higher than the kind of costs they're going to now have to incur. And why is that? Because this is now a relatively standard exchange of information. It's something that's easier for them to build into their systems. It's something that's being used around the world. There are a large number of countries that have been working with the US to get these kinds of agreements. So what's in it for the financial institutions? Well, if they meet their reporting obligations, they don't have to worry about withholding tax in the United States. So it's much easier for them. Article 4 also tells you that it makes that absolutely clear. So as an example, if you have a retirement plan, it's for South African citizens, Americans generally are not going to be involved. So it's deemed to be exempt from FATCA or a compliant institution. So it start exchanging information when both sides start exchanging information. So one side is not going to be exchanging before the other. It's coordinated. So what happens if a financial institution doesn't comply? Well, if it's something minor, that's dealt with domestically. But if a financial institution does not comply, and SARS can't get it to comply, then if it isn't fixed within 18 months, then they go onto a special list in the United States, and then the withholding tax stops applying again. Okay? But I can't imagine that any financial institution will ever find itself in this position, because they will fix whatever problems need to be fixed to make sure they don't get here. Right, we've committed that we are going to provide equivalent levels. That's an important commitment. Also, I mentioned earlier that there's an international trend to automatic exchange of information, and we've both committed that we would support such a trend and work towards an international model. That model was in fact released earlier this year, so that work is ongoing and is doing well. And the last is a technical point. We'd like to be able to exchange the tax numbers so that we don't get duplications. Article 7, that first bullet is an important one. Essentially what that says is if any other country gets a better deal than South Africa did, we get the same deal. Right? So that's what most favored nation means. So we can't be worse off than any. We can't be worse off than anybody else. So that is normally quite difficult to get into a treaty. The US were willing to consider that here because it's a new and evolving space. Right, let's move on to the annexures. So the annexures are quite important in this agreement. The first annexure says, well, how do you work out if somebody is an American citizen and you need to report, or a South African that you need to report on? So it sets out the due diligence, and it breaks it up into three categories. You have the less than $50,000 accounts, so 500,000 rand. You don't really have to worry about those. You have the medium risk accounts, which are up to $1 million, so 10 million rand. And there you have a moderate level of checking as to whether somebody is a US citizen or not. And then you have the over $1 million accounts, which is where they would expect you to do a fair amount of digging to make sure that you don't have American citizens sitting there that need to be reported on. That tiered approach makes things a bit easier for the financial institutions, although some of them think they would prefer just to have it over and done with once and they're going to apply the same standard across. That's up to the financial institution, but it's not required. Annexure 2 is customized to South Africa's situation. What we've done there is we've looked at instruments and institutions that are unlikely to present a risk to the United States and excluded them. So, for example, a government entity is not going to be accepting deposits from American citizens, so we don't have to worry about them. Same thing for the South African Reserve Bank. Pension funds, generally speaking, will be for South African employees, and if there are only a couple of Americans in them, well, that's not too bad, because a pension fund is about your contributions when you're working. So there's some substance here. It's not just someone moving money around the world. And then finally, there's an MOU. Because we have a central depository in this country for shares, so when you buy shares on the JSE, you don't get a paper certificate. That gets held in an electronic account for you by the CSD, the Strat. And the question is, well, who's responsible for reporting there? And the MOU just confirms that the ultimate responsibility remains with the original owner, but Strat is permitted to do the reporting for them. Okay, and that makes sense because Strat has all the information. Other countries don't have that issue, so they don't need that clarification. We do. We have the clarification to make sure everyone is on the same page. That's the long and the short of it. It's a first step into automatic exchange of information to make sure people are paying the right amount of tax around the world.
Members, although not a shipping.
No, thanks. Chair. I'm sure I'm suspecting the wrong thing. You see, we have been dealing with agreements with other countries in terms of exchange of information. Now, when it comes to America, there's automatic exchange of information, and in the manner that you presented it, it looks like it's an advance, or is it because it's America? And with other countries, you don't have this automatic exchange of information. What is this America? Unless you explain to me why the special agreement for America, superpower, not with us.
We are part of the global environment as South Africa. I'm not going to take this further. That's another lecture. Franz, can you just come in on this?
Certainly, Chair. As I say, America is because America was the first to move in the space. The global standard was automatic exchange was approved earlier this year. So South Africa is part of what is called the early adopters group. So what that means is by 2017, we intend to have extended this to the other early adopters. And if I remember correctly, there are 40 countries in that group of early adopters. So different countries are ready for this at different stages. So the US, well, they were pushing this hard, so we've reciprocated. And the reason we've done that is essentially to assist our financial institutions, to save them a lot of work and a lot of money. And I can guarantee you the financial institutions had to pay more money because they were complying with that. I have a sneaking suspicion I understand who would be footing the bill, and it wouldn't be the banks and the financial institutions. It would be passed on to us. So it assists the financial institutions, and I think it assists us. But that is just installment one. We are moving to extend this to other countries as well. And that we hope to have in place by 2017. So US 2015, other countries 2016, 2017. It just makes sense because once you've gone to the trouble of doing it for one country, you must roll it out for others. There's no other way about it.
I think one of our targets to accomplish in this parliament is that we visit the World Economic Forum. Then this whole thing picture comes together. I'm going to leave that to the management committee. The management team that we work on this one. Then you'll understand, honorable members, how these things work. Then you part of parcel of 3,000 delegates dealing with global issues on economic platform, etc. Thank you, Franz. Are there any other questions on the line? On the line?
Just to benefit, does South Africa provide any specialized training with regard to the execution of this agreement? In fact, practitioners, do we provide specialized training? Is there collaboration with the rest of the world? You make specific recruitment in order to advance this. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to get a clarity on Article 7. You say it's the most favored nation provision. Is that an automatic process, or does it have to come back for ratification? That's the first question. The second question is, you spoke about I just want to understand it correctly, a single tax number. Meaning, if you are registered as a taxpayer in country X, then you are a registered taxpayer. Or does it mean that between the two countries, you have I just want to understand what a single tax number means, and what are the implications of a single tax number? While I understand that there must not be tax duplication, but what are other ramifications of having a single tax number? Thank you.
Honorable Moai, just got a quick follow-up.
Yeah. The legislation, the reform legislation on the tax in America was 2010. I just want to understand, it was post global recession. Was this part of the consequence that America was hard hit at the financial institutions in terms of maybe reforming the system, maximizing the collection, so that we just compare lessons? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Moai. Ross.
Thank you, Jay. Right. Specialized training to practitioners. We have working groups that we've set up with the practitioners in order to deal with the issues as they come up with. And when I say practitioners, it's a very small set of practitioners, but it's primarily the financial institutions, because they're the people who need to do the work here. So, and bear in mind also that some of the financial institutions are part of global groups, so we need to make sure that we're aligned, so we're not sort of going off in a slightly different direction. So those kinds of interactions are happening domestically, and then obviously we have our competent authority for exchange of information, who is also liaising internationally to make sure that we're not doing something that is strange or unexpected. The post-global recession, you will have seen there was a lot of interest in tax and international tax after that recession, for precisely the reason you mentioned. Countries around the world found they were under revenue pressure, they needed money. And when you look around and you see large taxpayers not paying tax for whatever reason, you start asking why. And so a number of initiatives came out of that. You may have heard about the OECD's base erosion and profit shifting initiative, which is all about how do we make sure people are paying the right amount of tax in the right country. The whole concept of automatic exchange was very much driven by the fact that you've got very wealthy individuals who have money offshore, and where are they paying tax? Well, that's a very good question. The idea here is to be able to get a handle on that. So there is a linkage, but it's a broader one than specifically this issue. There were a number of things that were happening in the tax space. You'll have seen, maybe you haven't had a chance yet, but yesterday the OECD released its first set of outcomes from what they call the BEPS project, the Base Erosion and Profit Shifting Project. And I think you'll see a lot more about that in the financial press in the weeks to come. The question of most favored nation being automatic, yes, it is automatic. As soon as another country gets that, it comes to us. If you have a look at Article 7.2, we get notified, and we are then asked, do we want to switch that on or not? And if it's a more favorable term, we'd probably say, yes, thank you very much, we'd like to switch that on. But there it is. Sorry, it works the other way around. We have to turn it down. So we'd be notified. They'd say, here is the more favorable clause. Tell us if you don't want it. And it would be, I think, pretty exceptional for us to say, no, we don't want the better clause. The question on the tax numbers. At the moment, not everybody's records have got your tax number in it. Okay, so the bank may have your ID number or your passport number or some identifier for you, but they won't have your tax number. And the idea is that they should have a tax number linked to your account, and that'll be your local tax number, where you are a resident. So if you're an American, you would have an American tax number, and the idea is you would tell the South African bank, here's my American tax number, so that we can more accurately link you back when the data is exchanged. Equally in America, the American bank would say, what is your South African tax number? So that when the information finally gets to SARS, they can link it up accurately. It just helps making sure we don't have mistakes where the wrong person's information ends up on the wrong file. And then we ask you, why did you earn $1 million worth of interest last year? And you go, who, me? I wish. So it's just to make the information exchange more reliable. I hope that's answered the question.
Is it relating to
are you, you know, presently, are you happy in the manner in which we are connecting ourselves as South Africans in the business sector? Are we paying tax or, because we know there are those who are actually not paying tax. And sometimes you are limited to, like, talk to them as you are not politicians. I just want to hear it from their mouth, if at all, that is true, that there are those that you cannot go beyond to say paychecks.
If you read the speech of the Minister of Finance in February, he starts cracking down on those people in this country not paying tax. There's a special unit specializing in that operation.
Thank you, Chair. There are a couple of questions there. As far as salaries is concerned, everybody has to pay the tax that is due. So that's our departure point. Everybody needs to pay their tax. Coming down to do certain businesses not pay what we think they should? Absolutely. But that's an ongoing set of work that we have to do. We have to analyze the facts, get the facts from those companies, look at them. Is there reason for not paying the tax legitimate or not? Sometimes you may not pay tax because you've got legitimate allowances from the tax system and there's no question about it. Other times you may not be paying tax because you've got some very strange structures that go off into other parts of the world and then come back, and there we have to look at it a bit more carefully and see, are you paying the right amount of tax? So that's what we do. And we have the Large Business Centre, which looks at large businesses where the biggest numbers are. And as people come up with ideas why they shouldn't be paying tax, we come up with ideas as to why they should be. And that's an ongoing process. And that's why every year we come to you and we say, we found this little hole that someone found in the Act, and we'd like to close it now, please, because otherwise some money's going to leak out of it.
You see, this is very important,
because
the Committee on Appropriations deals with the division of revenue.
Well,
and that's where the money comes from. It comes from taxes.
But
part of the revenue collection.
Sir, we know there are those who are doing business with government, and SARS is very much afraid to, you know, do follow-ups on those people. Maybe it's because of... Now maybe they do business with politicians, and we have it in good authority to can say, you know, there are those, this country is being owned a lot of billions, and we seem to be politicizing this thing now.
We're going to deal with taxation laws at a later stage. I think you can reserve your questions for then. Although
Chair, you'll recall that at the same venue, the Honourable Member raised the same question in the previous presentation on agreements. I think Ms. Maharaj was the presenter. And, you raised the same question. The content is the same. Nothing has changed. Now, because he's raising it repeatedly, it's a worrisome thing to him. The rules do allow, if you think you've got an issue, and you want to direct to an institution concerned, the member is welcomed, I think, Chair, to do that, because it's not like there's a top secret. Maybe he's saving information that he can't divulge, because he says there are some people, he threatened the same way last time, that there are some people. So it becomes it's like a big rule. There's a rumor going on that there are some people unidentifiable. But we are a very open society that the members can channel the information to a relevant institution if it doesn't feel comfortable to share in a meeting, because we are very much open in a meeting, so that his concerns are addressed.
Thank you.
No, I'm just saying so that...
Hold on, let's just get over. Thank you, Obon Mwai. You can take the telephone numbers of the presenters and you can deal with them individually. If you've got information you want to share, you're welcome. We're not going to hide anything. Are there any other questions for clarity on this agreement? put the report to the committee, the Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of the United States of America to improve international tax compliance and implement the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, the annexes hereto, and the Memorandum of Understanding, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. I put this to the committee. Move for adoption. Honorable Mota Shuping, moves, and Honorable Motara seconds. Thank you, Honorable Members. That brings us to the last agreement, the one on SACU, South African Customs Union, agreement on mutual administrative assistance for formal ratification. We will deal with that, those two gentlemen. Eventually, it's your turn. You can take us through. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will deal with the purpose of the annex. I will deal with the general introduction thereto, and then some of the preliminary key articles. And my colleague, Mr. Mossad, will then deal with the remainder of the articles, and then we'll both be available for questions at the end of it. Perhaps to start off with, the purpose of this annex is to give an enabling legal basis so that the members of the South African Customs Union, so that the customs administrations, of the members of the Customs Union can assist each other and to give effect to the 2002 SACU agreement. We are required to ensure the effective and harmonious application thereof. I think you'll be aware from previous presentations on customs mutual administrative assistance agreements that customs administrations have to be able to cooperate with each other in order to more effectively facilitate legitimate trade, but also to be able to combat trade that is illicit, dangerous, and or insecure. In order to provide each other with that kind of cooperation, we need enabling international legal instruments. The Southern African Customs Union was established in 1910. It is recognized as the oldest customs union in the world. It consists of the five member states, being Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, South Africa, and Swaziland. The current legal basis that provides for the customs union is the 2002 SACU agreement, which was ratified by Parliament in 2003. That agreement requires that the members of SACU take appropriate measures regarding customs cooperation to ensure its harmonious and effective application. It also provides for annexes to be developed to facilitate implementation. This Annex E on mutual administrative assistance was developed to give effect to that obligation, and the annex is also based on international standards and best practice. Instead of having a bilateral agreement with each of the members of the customs union, which for us would have meant four additional bilateral agreements, and for each of them an additional four, and you can imagine the network of bilateral agreements that would have developed, it was agreed to develop a single instrument for all of us as a collective. The international standards and best practices used include the WCO model agreement, which forms the basis for our own SARS model in general, and also developments such as what is known as the Johannesburg Convention, which introduced a number of issues. And Parliament ratified actually the Johannesburg Convention in 2007. So we already have a obligations in that regard. Annex D was adopted by the SAARC Council of Ministers in September 2011, and the Council of Ministers is, in terms of the SAARC agreement, the supreme decision-making authority on SAARC matters. We received opinions from both the offices of the Chief State Law Advisor, International Law at DIRCO, and at Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, as it was known then, that firstly, it was consistent with international law and our international obligations, and secondly, that no provision was found to be in conflict with the domestic law of the Republic. They also both found that this has to be dealt with as a Section 2312 agreement, and it is therefore presented for ratification. The reason SARS presents this is because it is an instrument dealing with customs cooperation, and SARS is the competent authority on customs cooperation. If I can then move on to an overview of the key articles in Annex E. The first key article is Article 2 dealing with scope. So the customs administrations of SAARC are obliged to provide each other assistance so that we can all ensure the proper application of our customs laws, so that we can all prevent, investigate, and combat customs offences, so that we can facilitate the simplification and harmonization of customs procedures, and that we can ensure the security of the supply chain. Such assistance is always afforded subject to our domestic laws and limitations, including matters such as lack of competence or resources in our customs administration. What is excluded in this assistance is helping each other to go and recover customs duties that are due in each other's country. Article 3 deals with the communication of requests. Each administration must have a central coordination unit, and we are required to exchange requests directly between those units as customs administration. The requests are to be provided in writing and or electronic, and they must be accompanied by information deemed useful. If urgency requires an oral request, that oral request must be followed up as soon as possible in writing. Requests involving any specific procedure or methodology, if one of the other states wants us to apply a very specific procedure or methodology in obtaining the information or in assisting them, we will then have to look at whether our domestic law enables us to do that on their behalf. It is also possible to provide information on an initiative where you become aware of information which may, for example, have serious impact on that country or that administration of the customs laws, that you can, on your own initiative, provide that information to the relevant member of SAARC. Article 4 deals with the information that is exchanged for the application and enforcement of customs laws, and it basically sets out a range of matters in terms of which customs administrations would exchange information. For example, they would exchange information on new customs law enforcement techniques. It's always good to learn from each other in terms of what works. They're allowed to exchange information on new trends that are identified for customs offences that have been committed. It always helps to know what the bad people are doing. You also are allowed to exchange information on goods that are known to be the subject of customs offences. You can also exchange information on persons that are involved in customs offences, have been or are suspected of being involved in customs offences. You can also exchange information on technical matters such as applying relevant rules of origin on goods. Also on how duties are assessed and value and tariffs. So value is determined and tariff classification is handled. You can also provide any other data that will assist with risk assessment. Further information that can be exchanged deals with whether an item imported into a country has actually been lawfully exported from another country and vice versa, whether a good which is lawfully imported into that country has been lawfully exported from another country. I will leave it there, and I will pass on to my colleague for the remainder of the article. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Article 7, just to continue with the key articles, Article 7 and 8 respectively deal with your domestic and advanced exchange of information. Maybe
agreements made by arrangement, obviously, exchanged on an automatic basis in advance of the arrival of the goods and the persons and conveyances in the respective territories, information about those conveyances or even the goods and persons. Now, automatically refers to your regular transmission without having to, without a need for individual request. This information exchange automatically as well as in advance will obviously help with your identifying of high risk consignments before arrival of the goods and then to apply your risk management principles to those goods, where you have to stop, detain, and so forth. So this definitely has the benefit of facilitating your movement of legitimate trade and obviously then, you know, preventing illegitimate trade. Article 10 deals with technical assistance. Obviously, we recognize that we might not have, in terms of development, we might not be on the same levels. So here, this article provides that members may provide each other with technical assistance in respect of maybe the exchange of customs officials and experts, specialized training and assistance, exchange of professional, scientific, and technical data relating to customs laws and procedures. It can also help with the automation of the customs procedures. And also on trade facilitation measures and simplification of customs procedures. So they can exchange information about that and assistance. They can help each other. Article 11 deals with surveillance. This is where the customs administrations may, upon request, obviously by the RA administration, maintain special surveillance over the movements of persons suspected of contravening customs laws, suspected storage or movement of goods and means of payment, premises used for storing goods in illicit trade, means of transport suspected or used in contravening those customs laws. This is obviously is subject to your administration's, that customs administration's competence and available resources. If you don't have the resources, if you don't have the competence to maintain surveillance, then obviously you don't have to do this all. So this normally will come from either suspicion, where I could think of examples are two where your visual investigations and investigation trace that particular suspected or suspicious activity back to the country to another member state, and then you can ask for that, that they maintain surveillance. Or it could come from the requested from my administration giving information to the other country about that type of activities. Article 12 deals with controlled deliveries. This is where customs administrations, when necessary, may cooperate in detecting.
Can you please hold your? Can you get these people quiet here at the back, please? Yes,
Can I go?
Okay.
This is where customs administrations may cooperate in detecting offenses relating to narcotic drugs, psychotropic substances, and substances used in the manufacture and the persons involved. Now, these intercepted shipments containing such can be allowed to continue intact, whether illicit items either being removed or they can just be removed under surveillance in order to identify and apprehend the suspect that may be responsible in the smuggling attempts as well. If customs is not authorized under international law to carry out the controlled delivery, it must approach the agency that has the jurisdiction to conduct the controlled deliveries and cooperate with it in carrying out the operation. Or they could transfer the case to that particular agency to have that jurisdiction. Article 13 deals with your experts and witnesses. Now, customs officials may be authorized by the administrations to appear as witnesses or as experts in customs matters before a court or tribunal in each other's territories. This obviously is subject to authorization by the administration. And every request for assistance in respect of experts and witnesses must specify the case to be heard and the capacity in which an official is to be, in which the official is to present. Article 17 deals with your right to pursuit and extradition. This is where customs officials may request assistance in the pursuit of and apprehension of persons observed in the act of committing or participating in a customs offense. And this assistance, again, is subject to conditions imposed by the requested member. matters of extradition is going to be subject to your domestic law, extradition treaties and other agreements that apply to this. This agreement does not give you the right to extradite a person once you've agreed to it. The other agreements need to be, the laws of the, or the provisions of those agreements needs to be applied. And the procedures governing this implementation of this article still need to be developed. Article 18 deals with cross-border surveillance. This is where domestic surveillance customs of persons involved in a customs offense can continue in each other's territory. But again, this is subject to a request being made and authorization being received from the requested administration, including any conditions before that surveillance may cross any of our borders. So you can't just run into a country and continue with surveillance without getting authorization from the customs administration or the competent authority in that country. Covert investigations is Article 19. This is where necessary. Covert investigations of customs offences may be authorized by a requested administration. But again, this is subject to your domestic laws and procedures where the covert investigation is authorized. So this is, it comes back to that your domestic law must provide for it and you must be the competent authority to do so. And if you are not, then you should seek the assistance of the competent authority on that matter. Article 20 deals with your joint control and investigation teams. This article empowers member states to have joint control in all investigation teams to detect and prevent customs of offenses that require simultaneous and coordinated activities. So they just have to work together. So this is an empowered position for that. But again, the operations, where it is being conducted, that will be subject to the domestic laws and procedures of that member where the activities are being carried out. Article 22 deals with the use of information that you obtain under this agreement. This information can only be used by customs administrations for which it was intended and for the purpose for which it was intended, and that's in administrative assistance. Authorization may be given for information to be used by other authorities or purposes, if so requested, so you have to put in the request, and this includes the use in criminal investigations, prosecutions, or proceedings. Before you can start using information for criminal investigations, you first have to obtain consent from the member who has supplied you with that information. And the administration providing information shall specify any terms and conditions for the use. And it is used again subject to the domestic laws and administrative provision of the receiving member. Article 23 deals with the confidentiality of that information. Information is standard, it needs to be treated as confidential. At least it should be afforded protection in terms of your relevant domestic laws. Your personal data exchange is only possible after your members have agreed in an arrangement to provide protection at least in line with domestic laws of the supplying state. So customs administrations may use information and documents received in terms of this annex as evidence before a court. Personal data protection. If there's any personal data exchange between customs administration, this can only be done with prior approval before providing to the other authority. The receiving administration to notify how data was used and results obtained and shall keep the data only for the time necessary and to achieve a purpose which was applied. Records must be kept of all those exchanges of personal data. Security measures must be in place to protect the personal data. And the liabilities pertaining to the misuse of the personal data, if that person has a right to, for any court proceedings where the data was misused in terms of this agreement. So they can go to your courts in your respective countries. Article 25 deals with exemptions. This article does give you a way out that you may refuse or you may subject your information exchange to certain conditions, especially when you find that It will infringe your sovereignty, laws or treaty obligations that you have, infringes the security of the country, public policy or central national interests, involves a violation of industrial, commercial or professional secrecy, and is inconsistent with your domestic laws and administrative provisions. And under these circumstances, you can, of course, refuse to provide information or assist. Requesting administrations must indicate if they would be unable to provide the assistance they're requesting, in which case the requested administration shall then provide information, you know, on its own discretion. This simply means that if I can't do it, if I won't be able to provide you information, I should let you know that I won't be able to assist you if you should ask me the same information. Assistance may be postponed under certain circumstances, and the reasons must be provided for that refusal or postponement. So when you refuse, you should at least give the reason why you are refusing. Or you could say, I postpone, and therefore, subject to the following, I will then do it. In respect of settlement of disputes, the requirement is that, or the obligation is that you should at least resolve your disputes on administration to administration, on interpretation and application of the annex, and go through your SACU structures. If you can't do it on a member to, on an administration to administration level, and not even through the SACU structure, then you should take it to council for a decision. And as said earlier, council is your supreme decision making body in SACU. And that's the end of my story. Thanks very much.
That's the end of the story. Good story. Thank you for the presentation. All the members, are there any clarities about this presentation you want to do not? Questions? Honorable Mokla Shuping.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. For clarity's sake, is there any pattern that you follow in terms of your articles? Because I see sometimes you deal with Article 2, 3, 4, 5, and you jump to 17. From there you deal with Article 25, you jump to 30. I'm not sure as to maybe there are other articles maybe that are omitted or whatever. And in terms of your Article 11, you are saying that this can be done provided you have the necessary competency and available resources. I'm not sure if you are referring to the South African side or the member countries. I'm not sure if we have the necessary competence and available resources as a country.
Any other questions? Thank you, Honorable Mokla Shuping. He's very vigilant at the time of the meeting. Can you respond?
I'll have a swing at it, and if my colleague feels I haven't done it justice, he will set me straight. On the issue of the structure of the articles and the presentation, we could have taken the committee through every single article, but a lot of them are fairly standard in terms of our model agreement. They would have been presented to the committee with previous customs MIA agreements. So a lot of them are fairly standard, and that's why we generally jump over them in a presentation like this. We can return to any particular articles if the members so wish us, so we would gladly do so. Sure. On the issue of Article 11 and surveillance, as matters stand today, customs administrations are allowed to do surveillance within the domestic territories where they are investigating offences, etc. So they, if they have a suspicion about something, they can maintain surveillance over that based upon their own risk assessment. What this provides for is that within SACU, we can now request each other. Our investigation says to us that something is happening in your territory. Would you please look at the following people or the following facility or the following goods, etc., etc., etc.? And then we would look at it and say, well, yes, we can, or no, we can't. What would make the decision for us is whether we would have competence over that matter or whether we would have the resources available to maintain that surveillance. If it is a simple surveillance, it's not a problem. The more complicated it gets, the more expensive it might get, etc. So it's a balance of things that you would look at that point. There may be in another jurisdiction a case where the customs authority, for example, might be precluded from actually having surveillance. It's hard to say at this point. They would then tell us, I cannot do it because my administration is not competent to maintain surveillance. Or they would tell us, I'd like to, but I just don't have the people to spare for this today. You know, it's just how that one provides. Chair.
Any additions?
No, Chair. I think that's
no.
Well.
Any other questions? No. Thank you. Honourable members, I put this to the committee, a report regarding this agreement. The Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the MHJE to the SACU agreement on mutual administrative assistance, tabled in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, 1996, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2, of the Constitution approved the said MHJE to the SACU agreement. I put it to the committee. A proposal for adoption. Honourable Gayla. Seconder. Honourable Essa. Thank you, all the members. You were very progressive. We dealt with searching agreements, protocols, multilaterals, etc. Part of the global environment we dealt with in this committee meeting today, which is very important. Connecting South Africa to the rest of the world. Thank you for this team, Mr. Tomaszek, and your team. Honorable members, these are experts in their specific fields. And we are very fortunate that we have these people in SARS, in Treasury, doing their work the best they can. Thank you for all your presentations. We have got some housekeeping to do, so I'm going to release you. And Mr. Van der Merwe, you are semi-retired, so I'm not there yet, but I would like to hear you. What's the feeling? Quite enjoy it. Thank you for the work you have done over the past many years. We give them time to let them be released. Thank you. There's some tea, coffee, etc. outside. Help yourselves. That is not wasteful expenditure. All the members, please, but don't go. Just 2 minutes, then we finish. Just 2 minutes. All the members, there was a program meeting this morning attended. Father, do you want? Well, you're welcome to go, but the Honorable Motara will inform us regarding the latest developments. And I think it concerns every one of us, not only the chairpersons. So I'm going to give Honorable Motara an opportunity just to bring us aboard about the program.
Thanks, Chair. I think the program does not, let me just say, well, I'll speak to the program as it relates to the entire SCOP. We have the joint sitting tomorrow, and then we go on recess for 3 weeks. The committee is attending those that have confirmed the conference next week. But NCOP is going on recess for 3 weeks, as we've agreed. We return for the MTBBS process, which I almost said something else. Lubabalo gave us the program yesterday in the appropriations meeting, so all of us are aware of the dates for the MTBBS process. Just that where we need to start early, or there are joint meetings between the Select Committee and the Standing Committee, that the process for requesting special permission must be done in time. Because yesterday's, the chief didn't allow me to leave yesterday in the WIPRI meeting, and there were some, we have done that with Lubabalo yesterday, to highlight those meetings that are likely to start early. Members of the committee must just bear in mind that the NGBBS process will include Fridays, and in some instances will require the committee to start earlier, 9 o'clock as opposed to 10 o'clock. But I think before we go on recess, we'll just communicate it to members. But the formal process of requesting permission be done now before we go, because it still reflects in the program and starting at 10 o'clock. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that briefing. Yes, the MPBBS is a crucial part of our committee's work, finance as well as appropriations. If I recall correctly, we will also be visiting the Reserve Bank and Development Bank of Southern Africa, etc., from the 14th, so long is correct, from the 14th to the 17th of October. The reason why we do it during that period is, although there's an INSU peak oversight week, 22 to 25 October, that's the period in which we are dealing with the MTBBS. It's been tabled in Parliament, in the National Assembly. So that's when we work here, while other committees, where the chairperson's meeting yesterday, where the relevant committees will go out to do their oversight work outside. So that covers the program. Thank you very much. Also, our strat plan to be tabled with the leadership on the 13th of October. So let's be very progressive. Let me do it before the 13th of October. Esther is now left, but between the staff, that applies as well to the Appropriations Committee. All the members, thank you very much for your pardon. I was waiting for that, but I tell you, you're very vigilant today. Now, honourable members, we dealt with 13 agreements. We would have split them, but it made sense that we deal with everything because it's cost effective. Otherwise, I had to come back from Pretoria. And I don't think that's the way we want to do our work. So there will be no meeting of this committee. I don't know if appropriations have something on the agenda. you are released for Friday, honorable members, to go and do your constituency work over the weekend. And I thank you for honoring this meeting, honorable Essa. You want to be on Friday?
No.
It's in the Reserve Banks in Pretoria. DBS, I think, is in Midrand somewhere there. Yeah, the staff will react with you about the logistics. I don't have it now with me. Yeah. Mr. Andrew, just address this one.
Thank you. The traveling day will be yesterday afternoon on the 13th, so that we get the 2 days with the Reserve Bank, because they've been requesting that let's have a 2 day interaction with them. The hour that we've been dealing with the other stakeholders is not sufficient for them. They need 2 days. The 14th and the 15th. The 16th will be visiting National Treasury. The 17th in the morning will be the DBSA. So that the afternoon of on the 17th, then we can
I think what Mr. Rento must do is just to circulate the framework of those days and when you must be ready to travel. He's going to do that. As we can tell, you're very quiet.
No, thank you. I just want to make an appeal to our chairperson that in the event that there is any work to be done where it's a joint committee's program, let it be clear to our managers, because at times when included because they thought it's a finance thing. Well, fortunately, personally, I had a prior commitment, but in future, like this coming overhead visit, let it be clear that it's a joint committee activity. Thank you, Ken.
Who's supposed to inform the managers?
When Chairperson Idea or Chairperson Muhai does that, maybe if he explains that it is a joint study tour, that will help.
That's why I'm asking, is that Mr. Chairperson Singh, I've got one issue. When the NCUP goes to a strategy session, the committee session must be part of the strategy session because we work together as members of the committees, plus yourselves. But the committee personnel arrived there during 10 o'clock, the last day of the NCUP strategy workshop. And I start asking questions, but the people didn't like my questions I asked. It just makes sense to have to gel. The one hand know what the other hand is doing. Now we're getting funny questions about going to APAC, but it was a decision of that workshop. It was a resolution of the workshop. And if those senior people in the committee section were there, they were on board, but they were not there. So we will have to rectify that. And I think we can take the lead as a finance and appropriations to correct. But thank you for sensitizing us. Yes, the application for the Reserve Bank Blizzard, etc., which we'll be dealing with now, that's administrative. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.